Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and WNST.net, along with Baltimore Positive, Don Moeller. I'm Nestor, Senator Chris Van Hollen from State Fair in Catonsville. And
we all have stories. I know a young couple here in Catonsville, both of them self-employed. One of their children was born with a condition at birth that's required 16 or so operations at this point. Because they're self-employed, even under Obamacare, their health insurance, given the level of care that they need, is about $30,000 a year out of their pocket, not counting other medical supplies. So I don't know how a system like that is sustainable in the United States of America.
It's not. We are paying too much for too little, and that's the bottom line. And that is why finding ways to cut out expensive, middlemen that are just taking money out of the system but not providing any health care for it is the right direction to go.
How about the issue, Senator, of transparency? I hear folks talk about, I hear people in the healthcare industry say one of the things we could do immediately is to mandate transparency of healthcare. In other words, if I need an MRI at X hospital and they also offered at Y hospital, let's require folks to show exactly what the real cost is.
Well, I sat on a leukemia aisle for 3 years with my wife and watched the woman in the room next door not get the medicine she needed. My wife had the gold plan, being along. But I saw it, patches where it was $400 for a patch to make my wife stop vomiting, literally.
Yeah.
And it was, am I going to pay it right now down at the pharmacy because my wife's upstairs and weighs 80 pounds and is bald and dying, or am I not? Literally, I've had to make that decision because it didn't cover it. And the next door neighbor was making decisions like that five times a day on every pill, on every medication. I saw it. It's gross. It shouldn't happen in America.
It shouldn't. It's a nutty system. It should not be the case that you cannot get the health care you need because you don't have a big enough wallet, right? Everybody should get this kind of good treatment. And Don, you're absolutely right. I mean, you need to get transparency. I'm all for more transparency. I think people should have to publish their prices because right now we have a system where everyone's cutting their separate deals. And whether you're an insurance company or you're the PBM provider, you're not disclosing the deals you're cutting. And that means that some patients are, that someone's cut a better deal for them than the person in the bed next door. So this is why I do think we need to transition away from the system we've got. And we should do it as quickly as possible. We just cannot do it in a way that disrupts the lives of people who do have healthcare plans right today that they like. And so I think that's the challenge. Public option is a first step. I don't think it's, in my view, it's not the end of the road, not by any means, but it's a first step in that direction.
Well, shift from that, and I know, again, we're coming up on another break, Nestor. Shift from that for a moment, Senator, to talk about, respond to the folks on the other side of the aisle who are all going to be consistent in saying, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. I mean, we know that's what Donald Trump is going to run on, regardless of what compromise Democrats reach in the 2020 platform. The president's going to say it's socialist, like he would have when we started Social Security, like they would have in the 60s when we did Medicare. Put your budgetary hat on. When folks say we can't afford it, tell us how we can afford it as a country.
Well, we cannot afford not to reform our healthcare system. We should be really clear about that. We spend 18% of our total economic output on healthcare, and we are not getting the results and outcomes that we need. So we really, business as usual is going to bankrupt us over time. So that's why we've got to move in that direction. And if you get the inefficiencies out of the system, that means every dollar is being more directed to actually providing health care. So, my view is that if you create more of a public option, you will drive down prices. Not just my view. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has said not only will you provide greater choices for people, but it will actually reduce government expenditures because by creating competition in the exchanges, then the government's paying less. That means taxpayers are paying less. So this is the way to go. We need to have a rational system because, as I said, we're paying too much, getting too less, too much. We're not getting enough, and people are paying. People are being treated unfairly compared to one another.
And I know you're eager to get to a break. So, not directly connected to that, but you've also and it's funny, but I noticed that the Sun Paper editorial page gave you a big shout out and said, look, folks, Senator Van Hollen has a real proposal to shore up Social Security,
yeah,
to make sure that the Social Security Trust Fund is sound, that people are protected, to increase benefits. Tell us, the Sun Paper liked it.
Yeah.
Tell us why we should all like
your proposal. Thanks for mentioning that. And just to link this back to your previous question, look, because these terms like, you know, socialism, you know, market economy, capital, they all get, these terms get thrown out, and people use them, obviously, for their own political purposes. You got to remember that if you go back in time, Social Security was attacked when it was proposed by FDR as a socialist system. Right,
and 30 years later, when those people were picking the checks up,
and you know what? It is a government-run program.
Right.
People say they don't want a government-run program. Social Security, and right, and of course, we're right here in Baltimore County. Social Security Administration
is right here. Where would this country be without Social Security? Where would this country be?
Well, that's right.
Without Social Security, where would my mother, who lived to be 98 years old, 2 years ago, where would she have been without my father for 25 years without Social Security? Bethlehem Steel wasn't going take care of her.
It is the greatest anti-poverty program in the United States ever, including today. Tens of millions of Americans are not in poverty today simply because
of Social
Security.
But that's a handout, right? Just a handout.
Right.
So jump forward to your proposal.
And so Medicare, of course, was attacked for the same thing, right?
Correct.
People say they don't want government-run health care. Medicare is that. So what?
And try to take Medicare away from some folks.
Well, that's right. So
they would go crazy.
So Social Security, we do have an issue because if you look forward in time, you're going to have a shortfall between the monies coming into the system and the monies that are being paid to Social Security recipients. So we have two proposals. One's a very comprehensive proposal. It's called Social Security 2100, and it would make Social Security solvent throughout 75 years out. Very simple. We say to taxpayers, if you're over $400,000, then we're going to apply the Social Security taxes to your income above $400,000. And that is a very comprehensive approach.
You're saying to the rich people, we're going to take care of old people. Have an argument with that? We're going to take care of our elderly and our society.
And actually, you know, everybody
who's going to be you someday.
Under this proposal, everybody will actually get a little bit of an increase in their Social Security benefit. But here's the thing. We said, okay, if you're not ready to take that comprehensive approach right now, let's do something that will at least solve part of the problem right now. And so I said, let's take the estate tax, right? The estate tax is a tax that is paid by less than 1% of Americans. Republicans demagogue this estate tax.
They don't call it the estate tax.
No, they don't. Right.
So we know what they call it.
Yeah. Well, they call it the death tax, but I'll tell you what. Teddy Roosevelt, a Republican, said is he didn't want a country of aristocracy, right, where people just passed on, you know, every penny of their savings to their, you know, these huge estates, the robber barons who were passing on these huge estates to their kids. So under 2009 law, we still say that if you're an individual and you die, you can have $3.5 million that you pass on to your heirs. Nobody can touch it. But above that, for that $3.5 million plus $1.
Why $3.5 million? Is that like sort of $100,000 a year for 35 years that you put away?
It was where we were in 2009. And so, you know,
that was the right number
then. Just saying, look,
we're
just taking you back to where you were in 2009 because one of the things that the Republicans did in the 27 tax bill is they said, okay, we're going to change that from 3.5. You're going to get over $20 million of estate that you can pass on tax-free. And then they lowered the rate for people who had these huge estates. I mean, we're talking about the top, 0.01%. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, billionaires. And our view is, look, you can afford to take a little bit of that funds to help shore up Social Security. And
so walk us through I want our listeners who are listening to you today, I want them to understand your proposal, which you said will make the trust fund financially solvent out to 2075 or 75 years. Whatever. So tell us again what the specifics of the proposal. What does it do?
Okay. So we have two proposals. One is the comprehensive one. And what it would do is essentially close the gap in funding for the Social Security system for another 75 years by saying if your income is over $400,000 per year, you will pay your Social Security, your FICA taxes on the income above that amount. And that generates a lot of revenue that would then go to shore up the solvency of the Social Security Trust Fund. We have a separate proposal that said, because that's a comprehensive thing. That takes care of it.
Right.
But say, if you don't want to do that right away, let's at the very least dedicate some of our estate tax revenue to strengthen Social Security. Right. This is an idea that actually goes back to Thomas Paine and George Ball, who's the guy who founded the modern Social Security system. And the idea is we're going to take some of that estate tax revenue and we're going to use that, you know, to shore up this retirement security system.
To build a better society.
To build a better society. And so that's all it does is say, okay, we're going to go back to the estate tax levels that were in effect in 2009.
And you've introduced this legislation.
Introduced that bill.
It's sitting there. We need a certain senator from Kentucky to move it forward.
We do. And, you know, what it would do is strengthen.
There's a recurring theme here.
Yeah, exactly.
With a senator from
that's
Kentucky.
Right. That's right.
By the way, we're going to go ten more minutes total, and we're not even going to take a break, but we'll figure this out later.
Well, it's good
later.
To be here. Look, when I started this, the sun was in my eyes. I thought that was your guys' interrogation
technique.
Bring him
lunch.
We're not going to take a break. We're on 5 or 10 more.
You wanted to do guns, but I want to go back to Russia. Because the Russia, the interference.
You know,
in
there
our
was
election.
A Russia and guns connection a little bit in that last election, right? You had some of the Russian guy who was contributing to the NRA.
Maria Butina.
We'll go there right now.
And you know, it all makes sense. So you know, why would it make sense on Fox News? But the part that is amazing to me on the Russia side is. If you were on Facebook, if you were on Twitter, and I'm a journalist, so I speak in complete sense, you could see sort of the all of the where it came from. Cambridge Analytica. Now, 4 years later, we go back and see all of this. It was so subtle to most Americans that to say, well, they're not going to do it again. The Americans who had it done to them don't even know it was done to them, which is the art. And this goes back to Pakistan and you growing up around the world and knowing intelligence communities. It's really incredible what the Russians have done here, which is infiltrate, and we still have the ruling side of our country not even realize that it happened. It's kind of like a card trick.
Yeah. Look, there are three ways that our systems are being attacked, and we need to focus on all three. The Senate Intelligence Committee just came out with a bipartisan report a few weeks ago that mentioned that the Russians actually hacked into some component of the election system in all 50 states. Now, there is no proof that they changed outcome. In other words, if the vote tally was 100, there's no proof that they changed it one way or another. But they did get into some voter registration systems. And if you can do that, you can imagine you have the capacity to create havoc. You can knock people off of voter registration lists. So when they come to vote, they say, oh, sorry, you're not here. So that is a direct attack on the election infrastructure. We need to address that. Secondly, you had the Russian government essentially spending money through conduits to buy ads. And third, you have what you're talking about, which is this massive effort on social media, not paid, but just organic, to try to influence people's votes. The Deter Act that Rubio and I introduced would say, if we catch you in any of these three areas, you are going to face massive economic sanctions. So if you're Putin and you're trying to decide, am I going to interfere in 2020? You will know this time you will have a huge cost and penalty to pay, because right now it's penalty free. In fact, it's a benefit, right? He's sowing all sorts of division here, uncertainty, undermining our democracy. So we're just saying, hey, if we catch you, you're going to have to pay a big price.
Didn't we catch him?
We did catch them, and we applied some sanctions, even though Trump didn't want them. You go back to the very early days of this Congress, right after Trump was elected. The one thing that we did on a bipartisan basis with an overwhelming vote was we applied some sanctions on Russian oligarchs.
I think there were 90-some votes.
Yes, that was called the CATSA legislation, and it Trump didn't want it.
Well, most of them own condos in his tower, you know. Literally.
I'm hoping if the House can get a hold of a lot of this financial information, whether it's from Deutsche Bank or Trump Enterprises, they're going to be able to.
Why is that so hard to unearth for the guy running our country? Why is that a tough ask?
You know,
why is that not bipartisan?
You got to ask.
The tax returns.
What are you afraid of? Right? I mean, it's interesting. You know, Trump kept saying, "Okay." He wants the Mueller report to come forward, and then when it comes forward, he says, okay, this exonerates me, and then he spends all his time trying to prevent the witnesses from testifying before Congress, right? He's essentially asserting executive privilege.
Some might say is obstruction.
Right. If this is so good, if the story is good and you're exonerated, which as we know is not true, why is it you're making it so hard?
Let's tell the story.
If this is a good story for you, why do you want to tell it? I mean, that's the sort of obvious question that people should have.
Nestor, I know the senator has to run. We can't let him get out of here without we're here in the wake of several more mass shootings. Just this morning, you probably heard on the radio, I heard it, they apprehended another man last night walking into a Walmart with an assault weapon with a bulletproof vest, probably minutes away from another mass shooting. My gun story, Senator, very, very real. Remember our friend Kevin Kamenetz very well. August 27th, 2012. It was the first day of school, and we were actually at Woodlawn High School touring the first day of school, and my phone exploded, his phone exploded, saying, you guys have to get to Perry Hall High School right now. August 27th, 2012. Young man walked into the cafeteria with a shotgun that morning, shot another student before a teacher saw what was happening, tackled him, and we got away with one student being seriously harmed that day. I looked and did the research this week on automatic weapons, AK-47s. 600 rounds per minute. 600 rounds per minute. Whenever anyone would say to Kevin Kamenetz, you're wrong, banning assault weapons won't make a difference, he would just look them in the eye and he'd say, we had one student shot. It was horrific. Had that young man had an AK-47 in a packed cafeteria instead of a shotgun, we would have had hundreds of students having funerals in Perry Hall. I'm not making it up. It's not hyperbole. It's not exaggeration.
Somebody's listening right now in that cafeteria.
Right. Somebody's listening that was in that cafeteria. The latest polls blow me away. Overwhelming number of people, forget background checks, forget red flag laws. Now even the majority of Republicans support a ban on assault weapons. Yes. What do we need to do? What has to happen?
Well, first, let me say we're here also as we have a sergeant from the Baltimore Police Department. Correct. Who's recovering at shock trauma. And I know we all send our prayers to his family, but more than prayers, we need to address the issue of gun violence, which goes on, you know, on a daily basis. Sometimes it doesn't get the headlines. We need to address it in Baltimore, in Maryland, and everywhere else around the country. At the same time that we address the mass shootings issue, but when it comes to mass shootings, you're right. Semi-automatic assault weapons are clearly the weapon of choice. There, we saw that in the shooting in El Paso. We saw the pistol version in Ohio. In fact, the reports now are that because the police were able to shoot the assailant, in Dayton, very quickly, they saved lots of lives because this guy was able to fire off rounds with this automatic, semi-automatic assault weapon very quickly. I mean, lots more people would have died. So there are two issues here, right? There's no reason to have weapons of war. right in the hands of people. You can respect people's Second Amendment rights without saying everybody gets to have a semi-automatic assault weapon. After all, we banned machine guns in this country. The Supreme Court upheld that. And then there's the issue of also limiting the number of rounds that can be fired, right? Why do you need to be able to fire off, you know, 50 rounds. And so there's legislation, common sense legislation on both these, right? We had in place for 10 years in this country a ban on semi-automatic assault weapons, so we're trying to reinstate that. And then we also, want to say, okay, let's if you don't want to do that, we should at least limit the number of rounds that can be fired off in a short period of time, because it saves lives. We've seen it can save lives. So,
well, here's my concern, and I know you got to run. I know we got to get him out of here. The senators, people are saying we got
to
go. And
I'm paying attention to the people.
I know.
So they know.
He does.
That's
good.
We're
out of here. All right. We're going to come. We got so much more to talk about. I'm going to say to you, this is my Baltimore positive pitch.
All right.
We can't let the other side get away with something watered down and appear as if they've done something.
Well, that's right.
This is a seminal moment in the history of the United States.
It is. And I've introduced lots of legislation in this area. We're going to be pushing very hard. Mitch McConnell, he made a statement the other day that the Senate will debate it. He didn't make a commitment to anything because he never does. But it does show that pressure and public pressure can provide some movement here. Let me just say in closing with Baltimore Positive that this is a great city. As I said, my family's from here. My dad grew up here. My cousins live here. And the attack that we saw on this city from Donald Trump just shows how low this president has gone. He degrades the White House. He degrades our public discourse. Obviously, we have challenges in Baltimore City, but I can tell you that younger people are moving around the country to Baltimore City.
Absolutely.
Because there is a great spirit here. They're entrepreneurial. There are opportunities here. So let's work together to address our challenges. I look forward to coming back to talk about some
Hope
of the things
come
we're
back.
Doing on
hey,
that.
Thank you.
It's been great.
Thank you. You've been more than generous.
Terrific.
Senator Chris Van Hollen.
Thank you all very much.
Stay fair. We're out. It's Baltimore Positive at WNST.net. Back for more right after this.